Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Brianna Approved podcast. We have a captivating guest today. We have Marnie Salop. She is an entrepreneur, a triathlete, brand builder, marketing and PR pro, and a thought leader. This is one of the most impressive resumes that I've read in a while, so I'm excited to share this with you all. Marnie is the founder of a media brand, On the Move Media, where she is the creator and host of Marnie on the Move podcast. She's had over 400 conversations that talks about everything from endurance sports to entrepreneurship and wellness. She is also the founder of the Salop Group, which was founded in 2000, and it's a brand development partnership and communication agency. We'll chat about that. She's worked with some really cool brands, basically, is what that means. And she's also the co-founder of Fit Plus Love, an experiential marketing company, which we love because I personally am an experiential learner. And she also is this where she produced NYC's biggest fitness and wellness festival. Marnie has helped high profile, emerging brands, companies, personalities tell their story for over 20 years. So she is quite the expert, and I'm excited to have you on the show. Marnie, welcome.
Thank you. First of all, Brianna, you are such a superstar, and I am so psyched to be on your podcast because I have binged your entire show and love everything that you talk about, all the cool wellness stuff, the things that are kind of out there, the things that are really important. So thank you for having me as a guest.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yes, for those of you who don't know, I had the pleasure of being a guest on Marnie's podcast less than a month ago, Marnie on the Move. And it was a great episode. It was originally for Nutrafol, and then we kind of really pivoted and just talked about a lot of really great stuff. So it was awesome. And when we were kind of chatting post show, we were talking about energy and, you know, some other hippy dippy stuff. And so I just felt like a real connection and draw to you. And so I am so excited to have you on the show. And when I was prepping for the show, I usually try and, you know, go back to people's, you know, Instagram profiles and kind of see and all that. And you just have such an interesting background, and it's so, you know, diverse, and you have kind of this multi-passionate personality, or what I call a multipreneur instead of an entrepreneur, because you successfully just have been a badass with so many things. So I would love to first ask you, because you, number one, are an entrepreneur, you're a triathlete, you're a brand builder, marketing and PR pro. These are all themselves very impressive titles. But I would love to just hear kind of your version a little bit about maybe either which of these was the first one that kind of, you know, was the first domino that allowed the others to ensue, or maybe a title that you had to work a little bit harder at, or just the story of Marnie and how you came to be.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to give you the abridged version since there's 25 years of history before. No, I'm not 25, but, you know, 25 of my career history. But so when I started my PR agency, I was in New York City. I worked in the nightlife world, and it was called Salop Public Relations. And simultaneously, I was super into fitness. So I had always been a runner. And when I say a runner, I was doing like 3 miles, you know, a few times a week. I was taking spin classes, because that's what it was called back then. Now it's indoor cycling. And I just noticed, like, when I started building my company, that a lot of the people that I would have on, like, as clients also had this, like, phenomenal workout routine. And so, you know, that was a big part of, like, how I got here today. But, you know, back then, it wasn't really, like, something that everybody did, you know. And as I was working with my agency in fashion and nightlife and beauty, I started to work with more and more fitness clients, because that was sort of my side hustle, was exercise and fitness. My other side hustle was partying and being out till all hours of the night drinking. But, you know, those kind of things went together back in the day. And so that was kind of like the most organic thing for me, was starting this PR agency and working with all these super dynamic people and brands, and being part of the New York City nightlife scene, parallel to being part of the whole, like, fitness boom in New York City, like, back in, I guess it was, like, you know, mid 2000s or something. I have no concept of dates. And then, you know, so I started doing that. I worked with some really, really incredible people, right? So just to name drop, I mean, I worked with SoulCycle, with Julie and Elizabeth, when they had one studio and no money. They had, and we basically, I was young enough where I was in a position, because I was taking these classes all the time, to barter with them to, you know, in exchange for PR, I did classes and took daily classes in the Hamptons when they first opened their Bridgehampton studio. Ultimately, they ended up hiring me to pay me. But in the initial phases, it was definitely a lot of barter, because that was my life. And then I signed other studios and I became known in this industry. I worked with Nike on a really cool project where it was called Project Classified. And we repped some of the talent that would be teaching these classes, which is kind of how I met Julie and Elizabeth, through this Project Classified. And Nike was one of the first companies to do these really cool, like, celebrity instructor branded classes and events at unique places around the city. So they would do stuff at Soho House. They would do things at, like, a bank that was no longer a bank. And they were the first people to bring, oh my God, I can't remember the name of this class, Intensati, to, like, mainstream. So it was a really cool time in fitness, and I was loving it. And so that kind of led me to the next thing that I did, which was, you know, I always had my PR agency, and I could name all the other fitness brands that I've worked with, but I also ended up working and building New York City's biggest fitness festival with another company that I had called Fit Plus Love. And that was a culmination of all the fitness studios and brands that I had worked with, from like SoulCycle and Athleta and Lululemon and, you know, like Mile High Run Club, which is now still around, Swerve, and all these fitness, like running, cycling, boutique fitness, you know, cardio classes, and kind of bringing it all together to help revitalize a neighborhood and to help really brand a neighborhood. So it was my job to brand Union Square as the epicenter of fitness and wellness in New York City. This was pre-pandemic. So for 5 years, we essentially helped all the studios and retailers in Union Square, then that general area, really drive traffic to their stores through fitness, and also brought on lots of amazing partners that were, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of partners that helped really get people excited about going to these classes. And here I am now, post-pandemic, with Marnie on the Move, which is kind of, you know, and On the Move Media, which is something that started before the pandemic, but it was something that probably started years before, because it's something that I've always been passionate about, which is bringing together fitness, wellness, and entrepreneurship. Because as a successful entrepreneur and business person, you have to have something that's just you, whether it's fitness, whether it's meditation, if it's running, something that is just helps you, empowers you to be a better you, and then helps you do your job, be a parent, do whatever it is, you know, be a partner in life. And this is something that I noticed consistently with all of my successful clients, all of the brands I worked with, even the people that worked as, you know, whether they were an intern or a salesperson or at Athleta or at Lululemon or Sweaty Betty, like any of these brands, everyone that was there that was successful had some kind of workout or wellness routine that really helped lift them up to do the daily stuff that they had to do for their job and their family. And so pre-pandemic, I thought, oh, I'll just start a podcast. I had always wanted to start something, but honestly, I'm not really a writer unless someone's paying me to do it. And so this was a personal hobby. And I found the microphone, and I wasn't really an on-camera person because I'd always been behind the scenes doing PR. And so the podcast just felt super organic for me and natural. And I honestly thought I would just interview a few people I knew, but the people I know were pretty impressive. So, you know, my first guest was Patricia Field, who was the stylist from Sex and the City, and she's just a friend of mine. That's it. And, you know, my next guest was Gwen Jorgensen, who's like an Olympic triathlete and a runner. And, you know, she was just a friend of mine. And it was just like, this was my network. And then I interviewed Eddie Stern, who's like one of the most famous yogis and where I started my yoga practice. And, you know, Madonna practiced with him and Gwyneth Paltrow practiced with him. And it just kind of started like that. So I kind of set the bar high. And I was honestly having the best time. I never in a million years thought it would turn into a business. And here we are now, 400 guests later.
That's amazing. That's truly incredible to hear a story like that. I think when you follow your passions, of course, and sort of take, you know, I don't want to say money out of the equation because money does,
no,
you know, support our lives.
The equation.
Right. But, you know, people will say, oh, don't worry about money. It comes later. You have to worry about money on some level, but it is really nice when you can line both of those things up, especially when you're just naturally an inquisitive person. Any book that I've ever read has talked about the idea of just being curious. If you have any sort of curiosity for anything, always asking why, and generally asking people who've already done something really well or that you admire. And we live in this great world now where podcasting is a form of networking where it allows you to be like, hey, you're really great at what you do. Would love to take an hour of your time if you feel aligned and inclined, and let's kind of confabulate about what got you to where you are. And I think just having that inquisitive mindset in general, whether it's conscious or not, is what gets people, I think, further in life. I love that you have both sides too of branding and marketing and PR, because I think people kind of lump them together, but they're not always the same thing. So how do you kind of differentiate, you know, the idea of branding versus marketing? And it's evolved so much over the years. Yeah. I mean, everybody's trying to be their own brand. And my brother and I joke all the time that like building a brand takes a lifetime and you're always working on it. You don't just one day become, you know, this brand. So how have you seen it evolved, and what are some things that you're seeing that are working or kind of not working in those fields?
So in general, like building a brand is kind of the big picture, right? And then marketing and PR are separate. But marketing, because I went to business school, there's four P's, right? The, you know, PR, promotion, production, pricing. I think those are the four P's. Though at least that's what I think they were back then. And so marketing is then like the second umbrella. And it's like, how do you market your brand? Are you going to, what's your approach? Are you going to reach out to influencers? Are you going to do digital marketing? Are you going to, you know, go old school and advertise? Are you going to have this luxury thing where you do PR? And what is PR? That's like the next part of this question. PR is so interesting because nobody ever knows what it is. And when they hire you to do it, they think you're a magician, and you kind of are. So what it used to be was, when I started, was traditional press. So a PR person would always have to, you know, reach out to media. Media would be defined as newspapers, television, broadcast, magazines. Those things don't really exist in the same way today. And a lot of that is paid media, as opposed to editorial or organic media. So, you know, the world has really changed. And now I would say that influencers, podcasters, anyone that can sell your product and talk about it is part of the PR mix. I wouldn't say that they are necessary. Podcasters are media, but I wouldn't say that an influencer is media. But, you know, I think that the world has really kind of evolved in this way. And so as someone who continues to do some PR for select brands, if they are working with me to do partnerships or marketing, I would do an influencer outreach. And I definitely include podcasters in the mix. And I actually have always been a huge fan as a PR person of local media, because I feel like a lot of brands, a lot of companies want to know, like, when they get press, when they are featured, how can they monetize that? What's the ROI? And this has been something my whole life people have asked me. I work with really smart people. So as much as I help on one side make people famous, on the other side, they still want to know how they're making money. Like, even once they're famous, they're like, okay, but how does that make me money? And I'm like, well, you kind of have to have a lot of things going on as a brand. Like, you can't just have PR. You have to know how to leverage the PR. Just like if you're a brand and you send your product to an influencer, like, you can't just send the product. You have to follow up. You have to give them assets. You have to give them brand language. You have to really help them sell your product. It's not just like throw something out there. And I found in my career, just because I'm kind of focused on PR at this moment, in this conversation, that a lot of clients would ask you to get them press and then kind of like either peace out, not be available for an interview after getting them in Goop, or, you know, things like that. And it's like, you know, the only way it works is if everybody, and especially like being a consultant and being on the outside of a brand, you know, it's like you really have to have communication. And that's the irony of it all is that the brand's hiring you to do their communication. But I also think like some of the most successful brand building have campaigns, have great PR, have great marketing, have great outreach to influencers. And I think you have to consider the big picture. And one of the things that, you know, for me, I just think as someone building a brand and being on the other side of this now, building On the Move Media, which was Marnie On the Move. And I've always been trying to come up with like one brand. Like I wake up every morning and I'm like, today you're going to come up with a name for one brand. You cannot have 10 Instagram accounts. You cannot have, you know, three websites. And this is as someone who helps other brands and does PR for other companies. It has been a big challenge for me to build my own brand because I have many hats and I'm sure you know this. So I finally came up with one brand, which was like the best day ever. And I didn't even want to name it On the Move, but I did because it just makes the most sense and feels the most organic. But it is, it's everything that I do. So it's not easy like to start a brand. And even if you're the best expert in the world, you know, it can be challenging. Yeah,
absolutely. I feel bad, or I don't want to say feel bad, but it could definitely be, I think, disparaging to people who are just getting into the game now. You know, you started many moons ago. I feel like I started when Instagram kind of came around. So I've been doing this for over a decade. And now you can kind of be on cruise control a little bit more because you're like, I put in my time, you know, like I did the grunt work, but you still have to keep evolving and all of that. But I see some of these quote influencers because we have, you know, macro influencers and we have micro influencers now. And that can be, I think, probably overwhelming and daunting to somebody. And this idea of, well, I only have X amount of followers and that doesn't always even mean anything. But how can people even start to either maybe non-traditionally either build their brand or collaborate cross-functionally with people that they feel as out of their network or out of their league, or they're having maybe imposter syndrome about it? What advice would you give to Marnie starting if you had to start today, even though, you know, On the Move is still kind of in the neophyte phases, but you still have the history of having enough knowledge. So what would you say to a younger you?
Well, I think you just have to focus and stay the course. This is, don't let all the noise and all the things you say distract you from your main mission and your why. And I think that that is the most important thing. And sometimes I don't do that also. Just, you know, it's not easy. It is like meditating, right? It is like trying to stay in the zone and not letting everything in your mind that's happening around you get into your thoughts and distract you from the main focus. It is like anything you do in life. And I think that is the challenge. And when you can, you don't have to do it 100%. You just have to try every day to stay focused on your mission and remember your why. And I've gotten that advice from other founders, and it's the advice that I try to stick to. It is really hard to look around and see what everyone else is doing. I think you never know what's happening, though, with someone else. And so what you see is one thing, and what's happening is another thing. So that's why you have to go back to the focus. And I think, you know, out of the box, thinking out of the box and really building your brand, it's thinking about partnering, which is a huge, I think, asset for anyone, to find brands that are in alignment with them, people that are in alignment with them, and to work together. Because, and I always get this expression wrong, but all the tides raise all boats.
Oh my God, Marnie, it's so funny you said that. First of all, my friends will call me Butcher Brie because I will ruin sayings all the time. But I heard this quote recently as well, a rising tide floats all boats.
I believe.
Some version of that. Totally. We'll figure it out. And I said this to my mom a few weeks ago, and it's been something that has been so predominant in my mind recently because it's really made me evaluate people in my life. And it's this idea of if I win, we all win, but who's really going to be on that ride with me? And to your point, it is this really long road. Even if you know where you want to go, it's like following any GPS. You're like, when is the snack break? When are we getting there? Right. Like, how many turns are we going to take?
It's hard. You know, there are some other, like, so I'm you know, I do some influencer work in the running space and triathlon space on my social channels. And there are a lot of people out there that have bigger audiences than me and a lot of people that have smaller audiences than me. And I'm friends with people. So that's like my natural thing. And so someone that I'm friends with, you know, we've been texting and we're going to cover the U.S. Olympic marathon trials in Orlando in 2 weeks on February 3rd is the race. And he and I have just been like chatting about what's happening and, you know, who's going to be there and what we're doing. And, you know, it's so cool to have a friend in the space that you can collaborate with, because otherwise I was going by myself and I don't really, I know people, but I don't know people and I know what my agenda is, but you know, we're not the same, but we are similar. So it's been kind of great to have, you know, friends in the space. And there's another woman that I'm friends with that lives in Madrid, who was just on my podcast, who, you know, sometimes she has, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram. And sometimes I ask her advice, even though I know as a marketing person, it's just, you know, having a community and having a network, and this is something I take from sports, is really beneficial. And, but you have to find the right people that are aligned with you, but it really does make a difference because, you know, you can work together.
It's so important. I think as you get older, that's, you do so many things when you're young to try and feel like you belong to a tribe or a group.
Yeah.
And then you kind of really figure out what your values are and where things are or are not in alignment. And I kind of always bucket it into, you know, health, wealth, mindset, and relationships. Those are the four buckets that I'm kind of always evaluating. And you do really see where things are not in alignment and then how that actually makes you so low energy or feel depleted, or then you may be feel like you're not doing enough compared to these other people. And it's like, maybe it's not that I'm not doing enough. Maybe I'm just not around the right people. An iron sharpens iron kind of thing.
Yeah, agreed.
I love that you're an athlete because I think talking to athletes in general, we just have a different way of looking at the world, because when you're an athlete, it teaches you so much about real life and on the field, or whether that's running or, you know, a sport, tactical sport, whatever it is, there's these principles that you take, even something as small as being on time. If you're on time, you're late. You have to be early.
Yes.
Like if you're on time to practice.
That you said that.
Yeah.
That's a
if you're on time
thing.
To practice, yeah. You're running laps. So enjoy that. Or, you know, just the idea of there's a time to be a leader and there's a time to be a team player. And so I know you've obviously interviewed some amazing people, having 400 different conversations that is, I'm sure, has been so insightful. Have you noticed any kind of, you know, whether that's traits or principles or what I kind of call like, you know, the blueprints? I don't think there's secrets to success, but maybe some confounding factors that you've said, okay, this person does this, or this person says this a lot, and I'm going to maybe start adding that into my life or removing this from my life.
So I think, you know, from the many Olympic athletes that I've interviewed, as well as really successful founders, I think the biggest thing is focus. And it doesn't mean like focus on one thing in your work. It means focus on whatever your goal is in the moment. Also, and sometimes I think focus is negative too. So just, you know, I think it's just focus on, like I said, your goal, and focus on being present in that moment. And also keep in mind the big picture. The other thing that I think is super important and a blueprint for life, success, athleticism is setting goals. It's so important. Whether they're big goals that you think, oh, I could never do that, but I'm going to put it on my calendar. I'm going to put it on my schedule. I'm going to put it on my vision board. I'm a big fan of vision boarding. And also set incremental goals. So, you know, you've got to set goals every day for what you want to get done that day, whether it's a to-do list or, you know, something like that. And then set the big goals. Like you want to do something huge. Like I signed up for the Paris Marathon in April. So, you know, just back to like summing up those two things, I think, you know, it's setting incremental and big vision goals for your vision board. It's focusing on being present in the moment and what you're doing and doing you. And then I also think, you know, get out of your comfort zone. Like, don't always do the same things that feel easy, because what's easy isn't going to make you get better or more successful. You have to embrace challenges and be prepared for whatever happens. And I think that is another huge lesson I get from triathlon and from sports that I bring into my everyday life. And you could look at that vice versa. But, you know, you really never know what's going to happen. Look, we all survived. Well, delete. We've all come through this pandemic on the other side. Not all of us, but many of us. And we all had to pivot and rethink our health, our wellness, our careers, our lives, our living, everything. And, you know, that's something that happens on a monthly basis for me when I race, when I compete in triathlon. You know, you can do all the training and do everything you need to do to get to the race day, but it could rain. It could be 50 mile an hour winds, and they're not going to cancel the race. So you've got to figure out a way to get to the finish line and whatever it takes, you know. And if you don't feel safe or you don't want to do something, don't do it. But you have to ask yourself, can you do hard things? And the answer should always be yes.
That's so powerful to hear that. I actually recently heard a quote that said, under pressure, you don't rise to the occasion, you fall to your level of training.
Yeah.
And that made me really think back to this idea of sports, the metaphor of repetition. People who are really good at what they do, it's not necessarily, there's going to be some inherent, you know, maybe genetics and you're just a better athlete, or the idea of, you know, if you want to, what's the quote? If you want to break a few, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. And I'm like, yeah, well, some people are chefs and some people need a recipe.
Right.
I am really good at following recipes. So
same
kind of what we talked about earlier, if you can really just have repetition and focused dedication and discipline, and just, it's not exciting and it's not magic and it's not this secret sauce that everybody wants to sell you, but it's kind of just what works, and people don't always want to hear that.
Yeah. And consistency is really, truly everything. And you know, you're an athlete. I mean, you have an athletic background as well. I mean, it's so hard to be consistent, but it really, like, when you do it, you see, talk about magic, you see the magic.
Yeah. I know you do a lot of physical training. So, like, to that point, is there any other areas of your life that you've noticed recently besides physically getting your body to a certain point that you found has been pivotal in enhancing your overall performance as a person, as an athlete, as a friend, as a podcaster, as all the things?
I just think, you know, if there's anything else, it's health for me. I mean, I do a lot of work on myself, like from a career perspective, but, you know, I feel like I'm always growing in my career and learning lessons from other founders and entrepreneurs. But for me, the two biggest pillars are exercise and fitness, and then also health. And one of the things that's been like super pivotal is just being able to be dialed in to knowing what's happening in my body, especially as we get older. So I go to the doctor, like a regular practitioner, and then I also do a lot of functional health and wellness activities and exploration. You know, I'm checking my blood work every 3 months to make sure that all of my levels are good, to stay on track with my cholesterol, to stay on track with, you know, my iron and ferritin levels. Also, I look at my hormones, and I do a lot of that. And I think in the last 3 years, that has been really transformative for me to be successful in everything else that I do, especially, you know, cortisol and stress. Because as an entrepreneur and a founder, you know, never mind being athletic, it's just, you know, there's a lot going on, and that needs to be managed, because if it gets too high, it affects everything else in your life, not just on a physiological level, but like on a in your blood work and everything else that's happening. So I think, you know, that, you know, doing like a GI map test, like using alternative healing solutions and not always going to like an antibiotic or drugs to feel better, but, you know, taking adaptogens and supplements and really staying ahead of everything, that's super pivotal for me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're all tools in the toolbox, and everybody thinks that one tool is better than the other, but if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So it's important to put other tools in there. So I love that you said that.
For me, business is just, if there's something that's pivotal for me, like anything that I learn about work, you know, it's growing my business and seeing what works and what doesn't work for me, and learning to move on or let something go. It's not easy, but, you know, you have to like get that bird's eye view and step back and look at like everything as a brand. So I am everything as a brand. As long as my health and exercise are good, the rest of everything flows.
How has your definition personally evolved for health over the years? Because you've evolved as a person, you've evolved as an entrepreneur. And, you know, I love that you actually have the dichotomy of there's a time and a place for Western medicine, because I agree. And there's a time and a place for hippy dippy things and functional medicine and all of that. So how have you personally felt like either just your own health has evolved or just your definition of what being healthy means?
So I think when I first got on this health and wellness journey, I was like in my late 30s. I mean, before that, I was not healthy. I was not eating healthy. I did not know anything. I was not dialed in. But that was super pivotal for me. And when I started, you know, exercising and fitness were healthy. But what I learned along the way was that doing too much of that is not healthy. So you have to balance it out. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned along the way is balance. And, you know, when I first got on this journey of health and wellness, I had so many food allergies, like so many. Everything I was eating, I was allergic to. And I had lived with an upset stomach, and I thought I had an ulcer and for years. And I had worked on gluten-free books and stuff before they were popular. And I thought that was crazy, even though I never looked at myself. So I think, you know, like if you ask me, like, you know, back then, I was a different person. And I think learning over the years, I went extreme. So I stopped eating all this stuff that I couldn't eat. And what I learned over the last, like, I guess it was like, it's been like 12, 13 years, is that balance is good. And when I did my GI map test and I did some blood work recently, it turns out I wasn't allergic to a lot of the things I had been allergic to before because I detoxed from them, like gluten, dairy, allium, all those things. So I feel like, I think your question was about my health journey, but I mean, you know, I feel like balance is important, and bringing certain things back is okay in moderation, but I needed to get to those extreme places to come to this place of balance.
I tell people all the time, you should absolutely be extreme in your health at some point, because that is the only way that you will know what your version of balance is. Balance is so subjective, and you only know what your 50% is if you've gone to 100% and you say, okay, that's 100. Maybe I can't cruise there all the time. And even on the days when you're really hard on yourself, I did a post about this calling it health math. The idea of if you only have 40% to give one day and you give 40%, technically you're giving 100%, but you only know that by having this level of honest conversation of being like, wow, I've gone real extreme on both ends. I need to figure out that that's not sustainable. And this is where I can live, where I can maintain and sustain it and enjoy my life.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Is that part of your health audit?
I think it comes up naturally in conversations with people. So somewhere along the line.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I usually get clients who they are extremists in nature because, again, how kind of we joked on your podcast.
Yeah.
I see a lot of the same temperaments, type A, overachiever. Yep. They want to be the best at everything. They're going to, you know, they're going to crush life. And then sometimes it doesn't always work in every area of your life. So we're like, cool, let's do that, you know, from in your 9 to 5 or you're in a business meeting, but maybe let's be a little bit kinder to ourselves here and there.
Yeah. I love your productivity podcast also. I was listening to that. I think it's episode 60, right?
It's episode 60. Yes. I love that one. I'm like you too. I love a good whiteboard. I love crossing things off a to-do list. I love macro goals, micro goals. I love Jesse Itzler, who talks about setting quarterly goals. And I think all of that's so important.
He was one of my clients, actually. Last year, he launched a company called All Day Running Co. And we worked together. He's amazing.
He's such a great person because he keeps it real. I love people who keep it real, but also it's this idea of the Kevin's rule of, you know, every other month or, you know, doing something, you know, that's new novelty. I think that's important for us as humans. The idea of breaking things into quarters and then sort of that one life altering thing. I think that makes people feel like it's more manageable as opposed to every year I have to run a marathon or something that maybe feels too extreme for them. They're like, yeah, okay, I could break this into quarters.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the big ass calendar. I love that. It's so funny. Yeah. I always joke because I eat a big ass salad every day. And that was kind of like my thing on Instagram. And so big ass calendar. I'm like, I love that people are saying that.
Sorry to do this. I have to cough.
No, it's totally fine. We'll edit it out.
Okay.
Let's do some rapid fire questions to round out the show, rapid fire-ish. And then you can tell people where they can follow you and work with you and all the amazing things.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm excited. Let's do it.
Okay. I know you actually recently just did a podcast episode on your big wins and fails. So I believe it was a wins and fails analysis exercise you did. And we love that because I think failure is so important in life. And it's gotten a really bad PR campaign, actually.
Yeah.
So what was either your first big perceived failure that actually changed your confidence or your career trajectory, looking back now that you're like, man, I'm glad I had that failure?
Okay. My biggest failure that changed my career trajectory.
Or your confidence, or just kind of made you be like, yeah, I'm going to be a different person because of this for the better.
That's a dig deep type question.
We can come back to that one.
Yeah, I'll come back to it. Yeah,
I'll ask some softball ones first.
Because I don't even know.
I ask this question a lot because to what we were talking about earlier, I think people look to very successful people and they always want to know, what are they doing and what's the secret and all of that. And sometimes it's just not a secret, right? It's kind of what we do and how we've developed that. And a lot of people want to know what everybody's routine is in the morning. And all these health gurus now have these 30-step routines and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes it's just not that. So what is one morning or nighttime non-negotiable that is a part of your routine? That's not 30 steps long. That's not going to take, you don't have to get like a shaman coming in from Peru. Like what is one small thing that you do in the morning or night? And it's a non-negotiable. It's absolutely happening.
Morning coffee.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's not
healthy, but yeah.
It is healthy. I don't know why coffee's gotten a really bad PR campaign as well. Coffee is healthy. The source of antioxidants, caffeic acid, tartaric acid. It should be organic is my caveat there. That is, I'm a stickler on organic coffee, but there's a lot of health benefits to coffee.
Yes.
Okay. What is the biggest health scam or myth that you're currently seeing in the endurance sports world that you're just like, this has got to be canceled?
Okay. I think the biggest scam or thing that I'm seeing is people not fueling or not using hydration. I don't see a lot of it, and I think it's starting to change, but you definitely need to be, whatever your philosophy is, whether you are high carb, like carb loading on a race and using gels or chews or carbs in your water, it's important. Or if you have a different philosophy, and you know, there's science behind both. So I say you got to do you and what works for your body. You know, women don't need as many carbohydrates as men. I'm not a nutritionist, but I'm pretty sure that's true. And I just think, you know, people have to consider, one, that they need to do something and they need to be hydrating and have electrolytes in their water, not just water. And the other thing is, like, you can't take somebody else's advice in terms of like what amount of carbs or what non-amount of carbs they're using, because everyone is so different. So you really need to, if you are going to embrace this philosophy of carb loading and trying to get in 100 grams of carbs in an hour, or trying, or just using ketones and not using any carbs and using a different kind of fuel and burning fat, you got to talk to someone who is an expert, because everyone is different. You can't do what your friend's doing. That's my biggest beef right now.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you, girl. I am with you.
Yeah.
What is your favorite non-physical compliment to receive, or that you wish you received more?
My favorite non-physical compliment is that I've like done something smart. Like I've made a good decision.
I love that. I know we are fighting these blonde stereotypes every day. We're out here representing for the blondes.
But I love being blonde, gotta say. Because you know you're smart. You can get away with a lot of stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Except I joke with my hairstylist, I call it blonde dysmorphia. It's never blonde enough, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's go blonder.
I know. It's like your skin tone though, right? Like my skin tone. I would love to be as blonde as you, but it would not work for my hair.
Yes.
For my skin.
Well, you know, just keep running outside. You get those natural streaks.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. A couple more rapid fire, and then you can tell people where they can find you.
Okay.
I am a big fan of keeping things to the point. A bumper sticker version of something, an elevator version. It's probably like the Jersey in me. I sense that you're somewhat similar. Get to the point.
Yeah.
Bottom line, Brie is what I call myself. So when you're having a day that you're just not feeling your best self, you're feeling off, what is something, a mantra, an affirmation that you say to yourself that kind of helps you get unstuck or sort of, you know, can shift your mindset into a place of feeling better and kind of getting you back into alignment?
I have two.
Okay.
Do what moves you and stop it.
Stop it. Oh, I love that.
The non like PG version of that is shut the F up.
Yes. Yeah.
I do say that to myself sometimes because it's like noise.
No, it's so true. You don't have to believe every thought that you think.
Yeah. No.
Stop it. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Last question, unless you want to go back to the question I asked earlier.
I will, because I've been kind of thinking about it. Yeah.
Okay. So last question before you answer the real last question. One piece of whether it's health, career, life, or love advice that you would like to give to your younger self or you wish you would have actually listened to earlier in life?
I think the advice I would have given to myself that I wish I listened to earlier was to use skincare products.
What advice?
When I was in my 20s, my friends always said to me that we're older, like, you know, you've got to like do this and do that for your skin. And I was like, whatever. I think it's really important.
It is important. I mean, look at this. I'm trying to age like a porcelain doll. People don't think it's sexy, but I'm out here making pale look good.
And also, like, if we're talking about metaphorically and like in life, just keep doing what you do and do you.
I love that. Oh my God. I want to just like walk around behind you with all your little, because you have these 1-2 punchy kind of pithy lines. Yeah. And I love that because I'm like, what can I put on my whiteboard? So that's amazing.
And then I think like my biggest failure that I learned that turned into a success was don't do everything. You can't do everything. You can do everything, just not all at once and maybe not in the same period of time. And I think, you know, from a business perspective, when I was younger, starting out in my career, you know, I had this PR agency and brands would come to me, a lot of startup companies, entrepreneurs, they would ask me, you know, to do PR. And then it would turn into developing a brand strategy and helping them with advertising. And it was really like they came to me for one thing and then they wanted me to do these other things. And I would end up doing everything and then losing the thing they came to me for in the mix of it. And I think as I grew my company and my agency, what I learned was that I can't do everything. I can't do it all under this company at the time. So I started a second company that was just catering to certain things so that it would help me differentiate to companies and brands that were coming to me for one thing. And I could say, well, you could do that. We could do that for you, but we would have to do it through this other company. And I brought a partner on board for that. So I think, you know, I had to like dig deep to remember because it's been so many years, but I think like that lesson of learning that you can't do everything for everyone all the time was super important. And it helped me diversify, build a second company. And it was a failure in the sense that like, I kept trying to do it and I couldn't. And it was a success because I found a way to do it and make it work differently.
Wow. That's so important. I wish I would have heard that earlier. I wouldn't have listened, but I definitely would have put it deep in my brain somewhere. So that's such a beautiful piece of advice. You are truly, I think you're like, I know we just met, but you are like literally one of my newest favorite people. Really, for real. Like I want to definitely spend more time with you. But in the meantime, how can people also find all of your amazing information, your podcast? I'll link everything in the show notes, but just, you know, do a little plug city.
Sure. So I'm on Instagram at Marnie Salop and also at Marnie on the Move. I also have the podcast, which is on every single platform possible for listening to podcasts. And I have a YouTube channel. Marnie on the Move podcast is the YouTube channel where a lot of the videos go up. I also do product and gear reviews and have, you know, unique content there as well. And then a website, if anybody goes to websites anymore, it's MarnieOnTheMove.com. And then you can find me in all those places.
Lovely. Well, Marnie, thank you for your time and your wisdom and your just bright, shining soul. And I am excited to continue our newfound friendship.
I know, me too. I can't wait. Awesome. Brianna, thank you so much for having me on your podcast and all the amazing work that you do.
Thank you. Ciao.
Ciao.